I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Be Good and Rewatch It. This week we are going to be talking about...
I wasted a date night on this movie. I'm Patrick Klubik. I'm your host.
I am joined...
I watched Serenity yesterday, motherfucker. Like, don't come... Oh, I wasted a date night. Look, I know things are tough. Like, you know, having a kid. Obviously, it's a constraint. I watched Serenity in a movie theater.
Okay. By yourself.
Next week's Be Good and Rewatch It, Serenity. Just to be clear.
I'm also joined by Austin Walker, Rob Zachney, Natalie Watson. Hello.
What's up? Hi.
Yeah,
what movie did you waste your time on?
Glass, the 2018 thriller, because this is not a horror movie. It's not.
I barely think it's a thriller.
It would fall in the thriller genre.
I was certainly not thrilled.
Well, look up the happy genre and the sad section of iTunes.
If only. In a better world.
If you could create custom categories where it just reflects your emotional state as opposed to the genre. Glass of 2018 thriller by writer director M. Night Shyamalan. Please be the end of his now long-running Israel 177 trilogy, an arc that began with 2000's Unbreakable, a movie we talked about 2 weeks ago, and picked up nearly two decades later with 2016's Split, a movie we talked about last week, and a movie that also wasn't originally pitched as sort of like a continuation of the Unbreakable universe, which apparently, side note, the Split character was originally going to be the character that David Dunn goes after at the end of the Unbreakable. Like, that was originally that character, and then he was cut out, because how would that even... I don't know.
Man.
Glass, named after the Unbreakable villain, Mr. Glass, played by Samuel Jackson, opens with Unbreakable hero David Dunn, played by Bruce Willis, having opened his own sort of private security store, which acts as a front for David and his son Joseph to operate sort of a private superhero apparatus. David's wife has died in the intervening years.
What the fuck?
Sounds like she was like, yeah, I'm not coming back to this shit, so write me out of this, M. Night.
I hope that is what happened. I hope that...
We can get to that.
Yeah.
The way the movie handles that particular plot is interesting. He has been dubbed the Overseer by the Public, although apparently also...
What
the
a bad name!
The Tiptoe Man?
I think Tiptoe Man is better than the Overseer, which has some connotations, I will say, as the black man on this podcast.
Given the way they're going about things, you
could... Yeah.
It's like a weird flip on the Dark Knight. Dunn goes on these daily sort of runs where he brushes up against people in search of crimes and other dangers. Like, we don't get a whole lot of sense of how the run's going because the movie sort of, like, immediately cuts into sort of the split. This is really a sequel to Split that also happens to, like, come into Unbreakable. So... The city is tense over the Horde, the name given to Kevin from Split, who was played by James McAvoy. Kevin has a DID, resulting in 23 different identities who are competing for what the films call the Light, which basically means you get to control Kevin, and that is the identity that is forward-facing into the world. Split followed the emergence of the Beast, which is a 24th personality capable of giving the Horde like unbelievable strength and other powers, including the ability to climb walls. The Beast has this very mixed ideology of wanting to start some sort of revolution that involves kidnapping young women who are pure and not corrupted by trauma.
Unpure.
Eating them.
Right, sorry, they're unpure. Yes, Natalie's...
They're impure.
Impure.
But uncorrupted by trauma.
Because they don't have trauma. Right.
No, they're impure. Yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
They're impure because they're
right.
The
it's
pure
not like
ones
impure
the ones
because
who've
of virginity.
The understanding of
that...
their like impurity is like he's like attacking like I don't know. It seems like teenagers who are like I don't know. It's weird. The way that they're like framing the impurity is like the first group of girls he gets are like cheerleaders in cheerleader uniforms. Mm-hmm. So I don't like know what that impurity.
And they're not
is.
Characters. They're just hapless. You know,
yeah.
victims
yeah.
chained up to be it's, discarded mm-hmm. when the plot needs to move
yeah.
on to the next thing.
Yeah.
At least in Split, there is some nominal sense of
personhood.
Characterization happening
yeah.
to at least Casey.
Also, really quick, the mm-hmm. the term "the light" is something we said this on the Split podcast, but it is an actual term used.
Oh, really?
By people with DID. Yes.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Easy to assume that it's just some Shyamalan bullshit, but if
yeah,
anything, that only goes to underscore the irritation over just pulling things from real life and then using them irresponsibly. That almost makes me, I wish it was made up because now it makes me more irritated. Mm-hmm. Anyway, David goes on one of these runs by a city factory based on a theory from his son Joseph about how they could find this hoard, and ends up running into Hedwig, an identity who is perpetually stuck at 9 years old, and he gets a vision of the kidnapped women nearby. David and the bees confront one another and get into a really poorly choreographed fight before the police show up with psychiatrist Dr. Ellie Staple, played by Sarah Paulson, who's able to neutralize the beast with some odd light-zapping technology that forces him to cycle identities. She brings him to a psychiatric ward, the same one housing Mr. Glass with a theory, which is the sort of like underlying thesis of the movie. None of them are superheroes or supervillains. It's all in their head. They've tricked one another into sort of like a mass delusion that is part of a larger sort of cultural psychosis that the movie, not explicitly, but more or less is saying is because there are so many superhero movies, I guess. And that's Glass. And that's where we pick up this film, which I just want to I want to cede the initial floor to Natalie because you have been – I think you saw this first. You have tried to leak your thoughts onto multiple podcasts at this point. We've had to keep shutting you down. So I want to remove the shackles. And what did you think of this film?
You know, I want to say that in retrospect – now that I think about my viewing experience of Unbreakable before anything else, that could have set something up. That could have set up an interesting trilogy. It could have been it could have been okay. It could have been maybe good. It could
have
been
one where it tracked David Dunn as opposed to like going off to
I don't know.
These
like this
characters?
Is the thing. This is the thing I said. I said this to Austin the other day. Is like when I was thinking about Split, I don't know how to make that movie good. Like, I don't know what version of that movie is good. And I feel similarly when I just think about, like, the trajectory. Like, I don't know what through line, if they had followed, would have been the right one because it's just so messy. And so when I saw Glass, I saw Split, and then the next day I went and saw Glass.
Cool.
And Glass, I like for the most part enjoyed my time with. It's like only in comparison to Split did I think it was like a little bit less bad, but still extremely, extremely fucking bad. And the reason is that for me, the thing that is like really just fucking driving me up the wall is the carelessness with which survivors of abuse and the treatment of sexual assault and or implied sexual assault and all of that, how it's being handled in these movies. The fact that as soon as I saw Casey, I was fucking just furious. As soon as, you know, Casey's introduced back into this film as basically each superhero,
principal
character, David Dunn, Kevin, and what's his
Elijah.
Name? Elijah, yes.
Yeah, Mr. Glass.
Mr. Glass. Each of them have, like, someone in their life that's meant to kind of, you know, bring out the good in them, or, you know, see who sees the good in them. And for Kevin, because I guess his therapist is dead, who would have been the only other person, maybe.
And has no one else in his life, apparently.
And has no one else in his life. It's Casey, the girl he kidnapped last movie and tried to kill. And in this movie, she's the one pulling him, like, pulling his, like, talking to his alters and trying to pull Kevin into the light.
Through physical touch.
Oh, yeah. Because of love. Because that she,
the power,
like,
not of friendship, but of love.
Like, explicitly.
Yes.
And that, to me, just was the absolute most thoughtless thing that they could have done.
It undercuts her whole arc from Split, right? Like, if you want to at least give her her character in Split credit, it has very questionable things to say about, like, what you should do in entrapment situations and how you should handle them. But, like, she comes across as, like, competent, capable, and, like, trying to assess the situation and do something about it.
No, hold on.
What?
Split is a movie without an arc. This is the problem with Split. There is nothing that distinguishes Casey, except from her past trauma, from the other women that she's kidnapped with. But the movie makes these illusory distinctions between the way she handles the situation and the way they handle it, even though they actually try the same things.
Right.
They all try to escape at some point. They all take direct action. Mm-hmm. They're all resourceful and clever.
Mm-hmm.
Casey, for some reason, is identified as the special one by the film. And then later it's made explicit that what distinguishes her, what makes her special, is what the Beast values in her, which is her past history with trauma. But I don't, like, to me, this movie underscores the complete lack of an arc or narrative through line that Split actually has. Because when we come to Casey in this movie, it's basically she is a little strip of scotch tape being used to, like, tape over a gaping plot hole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, damn, we need somebody to relate to Kevin in this movie. Casey, what's good?
It's especially frustrating because I think Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays Casey, like, brings a lot to those sequences.
Mm-hmm.
She is doing her best to make something out of nothing and to provide the connection for the audience to give any fuck at all about Kevin, because it isn't, I don't care about Kevin at the end of that movie, honestly. Or, like, I care about Kevin, but I don't really care about that. I care about Kevin because I care about Casey, which is like, oh, Casey, I don't want Casey to go through more bullshit, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Can this just stop?
Yeah. And I'll just say that this is what I was alluding to at the end of the Split podcast when, you know, she's sitting in the car and in the police car, and the police officer and her kind of give each other a knowing look about, you know, the police officer comes over to her and says, your uncle's here to pick you up, who is the one who had been sexually abusing her whole life, implied by the film. And in the new movie, in Glass, she lives with a foster family now. So she's gotten away from her uncle. And the fact that what the movie is saying is that only by going through this new trauma was she able to, like, stand up and you know, figure out a way to leave her current situation, or get her current abuser out of her life. And then, and so it's that she, like, owes something to Kevin, or, like, because of that, that's, like, the basis of her, like love for Kevin, is that through his kidnapping of her.
I'm not sure there's any basis. Like, I really didn't, they did nothing to set that up outside of, we have both gone through abuse, right? Like, the thing that they're trying to draw is Kevin was abused by his mother. And there was, like, some harsh physical abuse insinuated by some shots in this film that kind of clarify that a little bit. And then, but that is their connecting point. And that Shyamalan wants to be the foundation for a relationship of love, when I think there are films to be made about how how abusers and the people, how people who've been abused and who go on to hurt other people can try to reconcile and can find some affinity with each other based on their own past previous situations. Mm-hmm. I think those movies can exist. I do not think Glass is that movie because it shoehorns that in such a way where it's like she hears that he's been arrested. So like in the beginning of the movie, after the overseer, after David beats him up and the cops show up and they go to Ravenhill Psychiatric Hospital or whatever it's called, she hears about it from her principal. Her principal calls her in and is like,
they finally caught
the guy.
Aren't you stoked?
Aren't you? Yeah. High five. What's good? And she's like, she immediately is like, I have to go there, basically.
Yeah.
She doesn't say that. But
she says, they say like, haven't you been thinking about him?
Yes.
She says, I have been thinking about him. And like the way it's shot, the way her reaction, like I immediately got the sense like immediately, like, oh, are they going to pull a fucking love story on this? Because that's like, she goes into like a dewy eyed, I mean, partially because like she's trying to imbue this character with anything and she's a good actress, but the reaction she gave immediately gave me the creeps on where this was going to go.
There's some Beauty and the Beast shit. And like, I mean that.
And, it's given no screen time,
she's 18,
right?
Like she's 17 or 18. Like she's a senior in high school. Just want to.
Also, yeah. There's the other part is that in both these movies, we meet the Kevin personality, the core personality underneath all the altars for like 5 minutes of screen time. Uh-huh. So like fundamentally, Kevin is an idea of just a regular guy afflicted by this condition and battling with all these personalities, but he's this vague idea of a person that we never really meet, except for when we meet him in Split. He's like, "What? I thought I was on a bus." Like fundamentally, he is not really tracking what is happening to him because the gaps he is experiencing, the amounts of time that is passing. Fundamentally, he doesn't know what is happening with his character for extended periods, which means he can't really. For a lot of this, I can't really buy into the fact that he's participating in the same arc that Casey is, because literally until like 5 minutes before the end of the first movie, Kevin thought he was riding a greyhound like 5 years ago.
Right. His absence is his only personality trait.
Yeah. Which is just in all of this in consideration with the fact that DID is real.
Right.
Makes it so like, I don't know how to talk about like, the way that the movie talks about like the alters like fighting against each other and like things like that, it's like I want to critique this thing and I want like, I don't know, there's just like, it's there's something about the fact that like he based it on a real thing that makes this very hard to talk about because this is not a good representation of it. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And like, that's why, like, when I want to critique like the way that like, you know, Kevin has been absent, it is a thing for alters to have like memory lapses and things like
right,
that.
Sure.
But the fact that they're like being used so carelessly as narrative devices, like aspects of having DID in a movie not really about having DID, and it's
I think the thing for me is like, we can critique the thing that it sets up for me is like, the thing it bungles is that because of its mismanagement of DID,
yeah,
or because of its use of DID in general, it can't sell me on the love story that is at the center of, you know, a third of this film. Like, it isn't even about DID at that point. I mean, all of Split was certainly there. And then here it is, too, because the character is DID, and I do think it's poor representation. But it's also just technically, and in terms of, like, storytelling, fucked. Because if Kevin had been absent the way he was in that first film, mm-hmm. you're right, there is some grounding in DID for that. There is a loss of time. There are alters who do not surface for long periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of craftsmanship fuck up that M. Night Shyamalan makes is then building on that thing, which is based in reality, and saying, and now they're in love, despite having only had a 5-minute conversation. There's this deep innate, and that isn't about DID. That is just about like, if they had introduced a new character at the end of the last movie who was played by a different person, and in this movie, he was only in the movie again for 7 minutes, and those together, those scenes are supposed to be the basis for a romance, a deep love between these two characters, it would also not work. I think it's, in other words, I think it's fair to offer that criticism without feeling like you're going to step on eggshells around DID.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just a failure in that respect, though it is also that.
Yeah.
You know.
We are going to take a quick early break for technical reasons, and we'll come and pick up this point right after.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What does the tiptoe man even mean? What is the implication that, like...
Is he tall? Is he on his tippy toes?
Have you not noticed how graceful he's Bruce quiet. Willis is?
Is or how much quiet? He did not show up to this film at all in order to act?
Well, hold on, though. That's just Bruce Willis at this stage in his career.
No, I know, I know.
He's doing it as far back as Unbreakable, where his whole deal is, like, be kind of a grumpy everyman and, like... just underreact to every scene because you're just so out of it and depressed. Like, Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, he's just like, of course you buy him as kind of a depressed dude trapped in endless malaise.
When was he last good? What was the last good Bruce Willis movie?
Wow. I mean, that dude's just been cashing Die Hard checks for, like, the last decade.
Let's see.
I'm looking up Bruce Willis IMDb.
He was okay in Looper, but editing did most of the work there.
Oh, you're right. Man, Looper's all right. Yeah. Looper's pretty fucking good. He's
in
Friends.
A lot of movies.
he is. He does not.
Oh my God, he was on Friends.
Yeah, he was on Friends.
He was Ross's girlfriend who was in college while Ross was a professor's dad.
Wait, what did you just say? He was. You said he was Ross's girlfriend.
Girlfriend's, gotcha. Comma, who was a college student of Ross's.
Okay,
while
I'm
Ross
lost.
Was a professor.
Nope.
Ross was a professor
yeah.
and had a college student.
Yes.
And they started dating after the
Ross
class
and the
ended.
Student,
Ross and the student. And her dad.
Her dad.
And Rachel started dating.
Yikes.
What?
And then one time they were all in a cabin together. No one knew the other one was dating. And it was bad news.
They just thought, like, I'm here. We're here with the student. And
no, like, everyone was, like, in a different room.
Gotcha.
Not a good movie, by the way. Surrogates.
Surrogates, not a good movie.
Not a good movie. Extremely seems like it would be my shit. Real
Me
bad.
Too.
Real bad.
Truly bad.
You can go through this list and make a credible argument that if we're saying that Unbreakable wasn't even that good, that we're going past 2000s.
I can 16 give, Blocks.
I haven't seen. What is 16
Blocks? No. So 16 Blocks is basically 310 to Yuma meets Serpico.
Okay.
Bruce Willis has to get a witness in a police corruption case 16 blocks from lockup to the courthouse.
I've seen this. Who else is in it?
Seen
this.
God.
Most Deaf,
yes. And he's
Yasin
Bey, and he's the reason that movie's good, actually. So now that I think about it, like...
even there.
Is it 1997, the Fifth Element?
Lucky Number 11. Lucky Number 11's okay, isn't it? Isn't that a thing that people like?
I haven't seen it.
Wait,
it's like, but I'm saying like genuinely
Banderas
good.
Movie?
No, isn't the Banderas movie
X versus Sever? That's what I was
That's forever
of.
Ago. Moonrise Kingdom. He's barely in it.
He's barely.
But
I'm
it's
just
okay.
saying, like a movie that like Bruce Willis
like
credibly
Bruce Willis
helps
movie.
Carry. I think it might Fifth Element's probably like the last one. I feel like he put in like a performance.
I want to give him Looper just so he has anything since two. Okay, I got it. Rugrats Go Wild.
Yep, I'll stand behind that.
Got it.
I mean, it does seem like he's in a sleepy phase and also requires an actor to pull it out of him. Like, Looper is probably, that's pulling teeth, right?
Was Looper that Christian Hayden Christensen movie?
No, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Jumper. That's Jumper, right?
Oh, that's Jumper. Was Jumper okay?
This is a generational thing. This right here is, you're from the generation that loves Jumper.
And you guys
love seems like maybe you put a little too much into her excitement, but like,
I love Third Eye Blind.
Jumper was like maybe a fine, like a decent date movie in high school or something like that. Like, this is,
yeah,
like that
I
can,
think that's what I did.
That's
right?
Probably almost,
by the way,
what you did. Yeah.
You know what dawned on me yesterday at the movies? For some reason, Hollywood casting agents have fallen in love with Jason Clarke. And
he's,
I
Jason
do
Clark.
Not fuck. Exactly, Natalie. Exactly.
Who is this man?
He is like a boring character
Jude
actor.
Law? Like, what's, who is this guy? Oh, wow. He's not. What?
Oh, he's, you'll in know. Serenity.
Yes. Oh, because you saw Serenity.
Yes, but also, there were trailers in both movies I saw yesterday for like Jason Clarke vehicles. And I'm 90% sure they just keep meaning like Jason Isaacs. And just like getting, like making a mistake and just awkwardly shooting the movie with Jason Clarke. Or it's just like
Jason Isaacs.
Ooh.
Are you sure this isn't like after Friday Night Lights that kept trying to push what's his face in like all those action films and it just was not working at all?
Oh, Jason Isaacs toured my high school one time and everyone was like, Lucius is here.
Taylor Kish?
Yeah, because he had a daughter that. I don't know.
Taylor Kitsch is from
Friday Night Lights.
But then also from, what do you call it? Oh my God. Why are we all like this?
Battleship?
They put him in Battleship.
Well, he was in John Carter, Battleship. He was in a bunch of
movies.
Right,
John Carter. John Carter was the one that was a huge bomb. That was the one.
Right.
The one that was like supposed to be huge. Yep. And they put tons of money into it. Mm-hmm. They marketed it like crazy. And then it was just like bombed.
Yep.
Just completely bombed.
Mm-hmm. John Carter Must Die?
That's it.
No, that's John Tucker.
That was Disney's financials after John Carter came out.
Yeah.
For all that, though, for all of that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I found Glass, especially after Split. I was like watching Glass and I was like, you know, I don't totally hate this.
Like, there's a middle section of this movie I like.
There's things I enjoy here.
Those first person action scenes?
Okay. We don't have
those
to get
first
there yet.
Person.
You don't have, well, to start driving. Let Rob say,
yeah,
why
Rob,
he likes.
I want, okay. I'm curious because, yeah, like. Is your theory there, or what you enjoyed? Like, at least as messy as it was, it had some sort of theory.
At least
that's
a worldview.
Right. That's what. So, what do you want to like kind of lay out where this starts when they get back to the psychiatric facility, and then the interactions begin.
Yeah, it's tough. I think there is definitely an element of the self-congratulation here that Shyamalan is performing. Kind of does work. It's like this reunion of disparate characters and memories and movies that's like, oh shit, that's his son. He's working
you
with
remember
son.
This?
Yeah,
oh, look, that's Shyamalan. That Shyamalan kid. Shows up and they're the same. Did you see that? Did you notice this?
Yes. Yeah.
Did you pick up this bullshit thing that we're supposed to care about over 20 years? That, yeah. M. Night Shyamalan is in this movie, he's in Glass, and he's in Split, and he's in Unbreakable. And the twist in this movie is his Unbreakable character is the same as his Split character.
Yeah, he's like, back 20 years ago, I was roughed up with some bad guys.
But also,
and,
he wasn't,
you know,
the point.
I got cleaned up, and you know, thank you or something. I don't.
The point in Unbreakable wasn't the point in Unbreakable that like David Dunn was like stereotyping like a man like
He didn't. He hadn't figured out how his power worked yet. He didn't realize he was seeing the past. He was seeing. So he thought he was seeing the future. So he thought he still had the drugs on him.
Yeah, so he actually passed off the drugs into a trash can to someone else. So he had the drugs at one point, but passed them off and then went into the stadium empty-handed for somebody else to grab. And then David Dunn was like, you still have them,
huh? But then he pulled himself up by his bootstraps,
mm-hmm.
And now he is runs...
positive security. Thinking? Wasn't that what he
positive,
said?
The positive
power
thinking.
Power positive thinking?
God.
I think that... But there's another element here of... This is a lot of talented actors in a movie. To a degree, this movie cannot help but be watchable because, mm-hmm. like, let's see, Sarah Paulson, like, on mm-hmm. her way to becoming, like, one of the leading actresses of her generation. You've got, they don't do much, but Samuel Jackson, Bruce Willis, James McAvoy, like,
good at twitching his eyes, though, in a close-up.
Extremely good.
Sam Jackson still seals the show in a number of scenes here mm-hmm. where he gets to do anything. Mm-hmm. Like,
and it does kind of feel... This movie actually does begin to sell me on the idea of this being kind of an effective comic book story. This entire conceit of all these characters being brought together and being put into a giant bottle episode does kind of work for me as a conceit for this film, where at the end of the Overseer's rescue of those cheerleaders, God, it's such a tacky movie. those cheerleaders that were abducted in their cheerleading uniforms, which cheerleaders just wear all the time, known fact.
Save the cheerleaders, save the world.
You have to wear that. It's like a high school movie. So after that scene, I think there's some, compared to the inert action sequences in Unbreakable, I think even the warehouse fight has some decent moments. Like the shot where they break through into the rain and the strobe lights come up and the cops are arrayed there in the background. It's like, shit, that's actually a cool moment. Now, admittedly, the ripped off Spike Lee first-person camera fight sequences are not great. Also, I don't buy that if the Beast is hurling a giant like carpenter's table across a room into a teenage girl's head, that she's just going to get up like she does and she's fine.
She was,
But I guess we
can't. She's waiting to be awoken.
Oh, maybe she has powers.
Potential.
Yo, if he had like stunt cast,
she got
that
a strong
girl,
brain.
Imagine if he had cast someone who was like an up and coming actress, just as that one cheerleader, and she was fine.
Yeah,
that would be planting the seeds for the next movie, Unbreakable 2. She's the Unbreakable one.
Yeah, I'd be down with that.
See,
but that's not
the stuff that you're talking about. I think in general does a thing. There's a lot of moments that. Someone pointed this out after our Unbreakable podcast that a lot of the framing is like comic booky framing in terms of the way characters are silhouetted or the shot composition pulling from big splash pages, stuff like that. And things like the light that's like silhouetting them when they're out in the rain when they first start fighting is a great example of that. And then I think it also undermines that. There's a lot of those shots at the beginning of the big final action sequence that are purposefully kind of de-aestheticized.
The parking lot scene.
The shot from security cameras. 100%. And it's supposed to be, right? Like, you can see... I don't know if other... Like, I knew that's where that was going as soon as Sam Jackson got to a computer, as soon as Mr. Glass got to a computer. It's like, I all but expected him to use the Ozymandias, like... I wouldn't tell
they
you about
him
it if
scripting,
I did it 30
and just
minutes
never
ago.
Went
I know.
Back to it.
Yeah, I was like, oh, he's putting this on Twitch, right? This is definitely on twitch.tv/Mr. Glass.
The movie opens. Oh, God. The movie opens on what if somebody just kicked the shit out of the Pauls?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And it was
100%.
Like, yeah, all right.
Like, I wish.
Bruce Willis is like these fucking Gen Zers. I hate them. I resent them. And I think their form of entertainment is stupid. And
okay, but to be fair, their form of entertainment is the knockout game. So a dude did just Superman punch a guy. So if Logan Paul started Superman punching people... It would be on site for that motherfucker.
It would be on.
For everybody. Everybody would be out to get him.
Yeah,
100%. More than is already true.
And that little bit in the house when, like, the lights go off and he kind of comes across as just scary as shit was, like, you know, those little bits where M. Night is able to, like, like, if you could
But that's just what Natalie was saying.
Right.
They're like, there's a version of this.
Yeah.
Of this world that works.
Mm-hmm. And it's the stuff that he failed to do in the previous movies, which is give these characters kind of... an heroic or otherworldly aspect, right? That there was nothing sort of, there was nothing, not even necessarily inspiring, but nothing particularly evocative about the way these characters inhabited the world. And now there kind of is, and we get a taste of that before they are all dumped into the classic, old-fashioned, like Arkham-like mental institution. Mm-hmm. Down to like the massive hydrotherapy room that's keeping David under control. The strobe lights barricade that's keeping the horde.
Like just torturing these people, right? Like just like knowing what they're like using their weakness. But okay, if they're real people, let's take away the supernatural facade for a second, right? you're just like fucking torturing these people.
But
like you're using the like the one that you know that they're this guy is scared of water. Let's say he's an average dude scared of water, and you're fucking like waterboarding him, and like it's just.
But that's the thing is like I think.
Go on.
Go ahead, Rob.
All right, so I'll go. No, Rob. Don't worry about it, Austin. I got this.
I believe in you.
That's what I find kind of suspenseful and exciting here is it is so clear that Sarah Paulson's character is up to no fucking good. She's right. Even got the color scheme that signifies she's a major character in this comics universe, right? Like, the scene that gives it away is when she's wearing her pink outfit and she's in the pink room and interviewing them. But the entire thing is, from the jump, we basically know that whatever she's purporting to do, whatever she's saying, this whole deal about, I have 3 days to convince you that you're delusional or something else is going to happen. We're like, that's not what you're here for. That's not what is really going on.
The thing that worked for me about those sequences is, and this to me, again, is the window into the vision of Unbreakable that would have, or into the East Rail 177 universe that would work, is it is revealing something that's true about superhero fiction already, which is when supervillains go to supervillain jail, they are being tortured, mm-hmm. right? Like, or, you know, if you have to arrest someone who has ice powers, you put them in a room that's cold enough for them to live, but not so cold that they can use their ice powers to get out. If you put Poison Ivy in a room, like, yeah, there's going to be some plants around, but not so many plants. Like, she's going to feel lonely because you're not going to give her what she needs to escape, right?
Yeah.
That's already true. Like, the Magneto glass room where everything is made of glass. And, like that is all... That is just from that fiction, but what this movie wants to do, what it's trying to do, is slide the camera behind those characters instead of looking at them, so that you're like, I hope they get out. Yeah. I don't know that it's successful at doing that, except for Mr. Glass, who is not held by any dramatic, supernatural, super powerful means, except one shitty guard. Who is the worst motherfucker in the world who like threatens to break his legs over nothing bullshit, which is the reality for people in jail already, people who don't have superpowers.
And also people in, you know, like assisted care and stuff absolutely. Like that. That is a huge...
Senior abuse and the abuse of the disabled is a huge thing. And so like that perspective is... That landed for me. Mm-hmm. And I was like... Is that the dude who gets his, or is it the nicer one who gets his?
They all get there.
Who gets cut?
It's the one, the talkative one gets cut, gets slashed across the throat.
Sorry to the talkative one.
Yeah.
Like the nice talkative one. The nicer, nicer,
but he's also one that starts slamming the fucking hypnosis lights on. He's like, da, 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 da.
Yeah,
like,
but the horde is trying to kill him.
He seem scared, though, right? Like, I mean, he's exploiting the weapon in front of him. And
He did seem scared, genuine though, terror. Not great. Yes, he was... I think this is the part of the reason why this part is tough for me is like the horde and the beast eat people. Yeah. They do that, right? They do eat people.
That's what's so hard about this is that there's like the average shit and the supernatural shit is just like it's like it doesn't it's not complementing each other. Right. It's like at odds with each other in a way that is not like making the other one better in a way.
Right.
Like it is like they're like complicating each other in a way that's not like not in the way that like, oh, this is complicated and that's interesting. It's like they're not like,
well, that's M. Night in a nutshell, right? Like is that like he feels like he's pulling things off of a shelf that sound like I've got some depth here, but really like he himself is out of his depth because he doesn't actually often know what he's playing with.
Well, and Samuel L. Jackson even has that scene where he basically puts a big old lampshade on the entire like conceit of this world and the world of the Northeast Corridor, which is that he says everything here could be explained by science, but it is also magical and heroic or some bullshit. But basically, he's arguing that we're in this like twilight world of, oh yeah, this is a realistic world where things behave according to natural laws and their scientific explanations. But also, it's superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes it icky.
There is a... One of the things that's interesting for me as someone who like used to be deep into comics is that there is a heritage of... M. Night Shyamalan is not the first person to be like, what if superheroes but real?
Right.
And sometimes that goes... That's almost always this very dark and edgy thing. And obviously, we already talked about heroes on this podcast briefly just now. We moved to the save the cheerleader, save the world bit,
yeah.
Which is also was also trying to do that bit, right? If people are like, oh, I wish this universe, but like less shitty to, I don't know. I haven't rewatched Heroes in a long time.
I watched the first two seasons of Heroes. Yeah, I had fond memories of what that show was attempting to do before it all like fell apart under its own mythology. Heroes is basically like what if Unbreakable but TV series and like a little happier and less bleak.
And then like, but in the world of superhero comics, like you have really edgy experiments like The Boys. You obviously have Watchmen, Alan Moore's like seminal work that is a complete deconstruction of the genre. Mm-hmm. You have things like The Dark Knight, Frank Miller's The Dark Knight, or even Kingdom Come. Things that are like, oh, what if superheroes existed as superheroes, but they had like dark motivations, human motivations, and we thought of them as humans who broke down and et cetera. Mm-hmm. And et cetera. God, fuck off, M. Night Shyamalan, for corrupting et cetera for me. But like, in some way, this is a film that wants to not... this film feels like it doesn't want those to exist. It wants me as the viewer to not know that superheroes have been deconstructed before. Because so many of its tricks are someone literally looking at the camera and saying... In comic books, this is what happens. It did that a little bit. This is the showdown. It did that a little bit in Unbreakable.
This is when all the main characters come together.
I can't believe it that they did it like three times in this movie.
Like the first time it happened, it sort of worked. Yeah, and it's always put on Elijah, right? Like he
or
then
Elijah's mom,
like,
which
or
is
Elijah's
also
mom.
Yeah.
They come like so. There's like meta narrators of like it's just weird. Like you're right. Like it's a movie that pretends. Nothing has happened in the last 20 years, and that because M. Night has had this like grand revelation of how we should think about comic book characters, even though like so much has happened in the 19 years since. Like the idea of like the comic book terminology is now that's everyone is familiar with the tropes.
Yeah, it makes sense in Unbreakable because like even the audience within. The movie, like the guy that tries to buy the like super, you know, expensive comic book drawing for his like 4-year-old kid and Elijah's like, you don't know what you're doing, like you obviously don't know what you have in front of you. It makes sense there. But yeah, at this point it's like we like presumably in this universe too, like people and they say that they're like everyone knows about superheroes now and thinks they're one because of comic book movies. So then treat the audience like your audience within the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
right.
It's like there's no like continuity.
We know what the
them.
Showdown is. We've all seen Marvel movies.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
Don't need the character.
But hey, but you need to put out the Osaka Tower magazine. It says a true Marvel.
Unbelievable. I can't
with
believe
the
they did that.
Font.
I didn't even catch that and I'm upset.
Oh,
now.
It's the font. I was pulling my hair out. Or similar enough to not get sued.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, and there's the again, what does this series want to say about comic books? It still remains kind of opaque to me because you have Sarah Paulson at one point, I think when she's confronting David's son. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's Mr. Glass's Elijah's mother, but where she's explaining that, you know, I've been to comic books conventions. They're trying to sell you something, and basically articulating this view that like comics are a low and ultimately destructive art.
Comic-Con is dangerous.
or have been corrupted in some way by like mass consumer, like that.
Yes,
there's not even a through line that like. Maybe there's a through line where it's like, oh, comics used to be, like, because there's, you know, Elijah's whole thing is like, they are mythological tomes that are passing down history, which given the twist at the end, like, puts so much weight behind that. But
I
then
love Assassin's Creed.
Sarah Paulson's character is, you know, like, weirdly articulating a sense, like, oh, they've been corrupted by, like, the mass adoption of like, cultural consumerism, which
it's a confused message. It doesn't
But
land.
Also, she's guarding the secret.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a piece that went up recently over on The Guardian by Zach Vasquez called Shattered Glass, Why We Need to Stop Deconstructing Our Superheroes, which is an interesting read. But I just want to read one little segment before we talk about like kind of the final act of this film and the conclusion and try to bring it together, because I think it speaks to some of what we're talking about around the like does this film successfully deconstruct the superhero or make it more realistic or whatever? Mm-hmm. You know, the rest of the piece kind of sets up the stage, which is what we've already done around saying, hey, you know, everything from Watchmen to The Dark Knight and everything in between has been deconstructing superhero films. Even Marvel has done it with some of their films in the last few years, like Civil War and what's the good one? So Winter Soldier. Thor. Right. All of these films, all of the deconstructive films, all the films that deconstruct superheroes, coat themselves in layers of moral ambiguity right up until their third acts, at which point they drop whatever philosophical and moral quandaries they have introduced, the most egregious example being Batman's one-time use of warrantless wiretapping in The Dark Knight, to focus on the final, very expensive set piece. Good ultimately triumphs, unless it's the middle entry of a franchise in which it might end on a cliffhanger, and any ambiguity is traded in for easily digestible lessons, usually about sacrifice or humility or something along those lines. And that, minus the very expensive set piece, which is super obviously missing here for budget reasons, where I felt the budget so much on this movie, mm-hmm. partially because I just don't think it's well edited or well shot for much of it. In
to
the way
hide
that,
it, right? Like,
to
like,
hide
it's,
yeah.
It's a movie that Split, being, you know, the way it was conceived, could hide the fact
yes.
that there wasn't much, you know, again, if you forget, like, these movies are...
this movie costs like $8 million or something.
Yeah, they're made in production with Blumhouse, which does, like, you know, we've talked about like the low budget
Sorry,
model to make it up
million.
On the back end.
These, 20 million
these
to make.
Well, and also, these
which
movies are co-financed with M. Night himself.
Right.
Starting with The Visit, he started co-financing these movies. He took the money from The Visit, put that in a Split, took the money from Split, put it... So, like, there's... Yeah, it's just when you're going to make those, usually the reason you bottle it, like the reason you bottle it inside the facility is because you can hide the fact that you don't have that many rooms to play with. But the moment you go to the fucking parking lot and start doing wide shots that like show you don't have much to go with.
Is
just,
which is like, on one hand, I like it. I like the, I do like that there isn't.
That it's not the tower, that it chooses
and
to be something
yet,
more
But
mundane.
If they like would have, and that's the thing that I'm saying is like, that's the average,
right?
That's the normal, that's the real, but it's like not, it's not in communication with what the supernatural is. Like, it's not in communication with what the spectacle of Marvel movies are, of what comic book movies are. Like, it's like...
Do you think like it just needed to be shifted a little closer? It didn't have to go to the tower, but it could have gone to
No, I think it
mall.
Could have been in the parking lot, but like
right.
bring that like out more in a way that's like talking about the like the averageness of this. Do you know what I mean? Not trying to like pretend it's something like fantastical in like a average set
do
piece.
You just want there not to be superpowers, or do you want it to be because I think it's already shot in such a way that the superpowers don't look that remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Like they flip a car over. I that part, like, this is one of the things, like, again, on paper this works for me. And I think even to some degree, the conclusion of all this, Mr. Glass, like, winning in the end because Sam Jackson can make me feel for that character and
mm-hmm.
his mother can make me feel for that character,
mm-hmm.
like, that stuff still landed for me. The fight scene didn't really because it
maybe if the fight scene was, like...
When he's doing the tiger leap across, like, I'm like,
slower.
No!
See, that would have been a time to, like,
show me a wide shot on it!
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, that would have been a time to come close in.
So, right. Is the premise then that maybe they could have shot this like a big-budget Marvel movie, but kept it in
That's what I think. It's like, maybe you, like, you reel it in, like, closer and, like, shoot it tight and like gritty and, like... But maybe there's something that kind of shows that it's still in this like real life. I don't know. Maybe it is the fact that like all those people are watching, or I don't know what it is. I'm not a fucking filmmaker.
but it doesn't work.
But it just doesn't work.
So I think for me, like, where this movie kind of really begins to fumble is actually that scene with the three of them being interviewed by Sarah Paulson.
Yeah.
Because the best scenes in Unbreakable are when Elijah is trying to get Bruce Willis to see the world the way he sees it. Mm-hmm. He's articulating, again, the "we live in mediocre time" speech. This movie badly needs a mediocre time speech. It needs these three characters to regard each other and look at each other. And it is really like telling, I think speaks to the problems with this film, that in a scene with the three actors sort of lined up and talking to Sarah Paulson, it's all shot in a series of two shots between Sarah Paulson's character and the three superheroes, right? Mm-hmm. And, well, or super characters, whatever you want to call
them.
They don't have a
name for them, do they? They don't have like an in-setting.
Acela heroes. Anyway. Okay. The three Acela heroes are
the three
there.
Train cars.
They're all isolated in the series of two shots. And at one point, McAvoy even looks to his left as something lands for that character and is looking toward Bruce Willis's character, but we never see Bruce Willis's character react. It's all this, despite the fact you have an incredible amount of star power in one room. You have one set with four great actors sharing it. They never interact. They don't talk to it. Mm-hmm. Like,
I was so bummed.
Imagine that scene. Like, imagine what Tarantino would do with that scene. It would be gaudy. It would be showy. But they would talk to each other, and there would be ideas, and there would be sort of an exchange of, you know, actual positions that try to add up to a greater meaning for this movie. Mm-hmm. Here,
the thing is, you don't even need to do what would Tarantino do. You could do what did M. Night Shyamalan do in Unbreakable.
Monologue.
Yes.
But like in Unbreakable, that at least was some exchange. There was a monologue, certainly. But like even there, you did get Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis talking and debating, or the We Live in Mediocre Time scene was with the wife who has since died of leukemia in this film.
And there's like the very briefest of scenes where he sits down at a table and I think it's like, I need to tell you something, which must have been the reveal of what him and his son have been up to. But the way the music and the way it's shot is like, yo, she wasn't cool with it. But it's never like,
it sets it up as no scene
between him and Joseph that's like, hey, like, you know, we fucked up telling your mom she sure didn't like us and then she died of cancer. Like, it's
it sets it up like they broke up again. Like, it sets it up I was like, oh, she's gone. Like, she left.
There was also, again, like, this is just me coming to this as a comic book fan, but like, yeah, this is like getting into Watchmen spoilers. A character's partner getting diagnosed with people being diagnosed with cancer because of proximity to superheroes is a thing in superhero fiction. Like, from exposure. Oh. And I was like, oh, fuck, they're not going to do this, are they? And they don't, but I can't shake the feeling that M. Night Shyamalan is like, I got you, Austin. And it's not, this isn't a thing, this isn't a knock against the film, but there is a certain, when the film is also the film that's like, this is called The Showdown. Like, it's as, it made me uneasy about the film. It made me as if I was watching a con man at work. Do you know what I mean? It's like he showed me the card up his sleeve a little bit and then put it back. I was like, no, but I'm going to play this game fair. And I just don't trust him.
That's M. Night's whole logic.
I do want to shout out, we do get a taste of, I think, that better movie, which is when Elijah is talking to Hedwig. When he goes 100%. And busts the horde out, it's like, oh, thank God, like, written characters interacting with each other. Like, it is amazing where, like, Hedwig is like, so what am I? What's my superpower? And you're nine forever, right? Yeah. That's remarkable. Like, man, Samuel Jackson, like,
fuck, man.
He doesn't have to do much in this movie, which is good because he does not do much, but like, there are a couple lines where, like, he's got three, 4 words he can really deliver.
He does need to do much. Rob, he needed to do more, but not because Sam Jackson needed to do more. He needed to be scripted. The name of the movie is Glass. My guy doesn't talk until
for 70 minutes. 70 minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, there's a way to do that, and it certainly built tension and, like, hype and, like, I need him to do something. And then he fucking does some shit, like, no doubt. That little bit, the bits of the film between us realizing that Elijah is not just aware but active and the big fight scene at the end is my favorite part of this movie.
Yeah, agreed.
And he also talks to David. He does, there's the great talk of him, like, threatening the tower and, like, talking into the cell. And he's, like, setting it up. He's putting the chess pieces on the board and is like, well, David, you know, me and the Beast are going to go to this tower. And if someone doesn't come to stop us, a lot of people are going to die, David. Mm-hmm. And it is the clearest that his motivation is throughout the entire trilogy, I think, in a sense. In, like, obviously, he's already said his entire goal is to make the world understand that we are not living in mediocre times, that we do have something amazing inside of us. But it is, like, the clearest summation or example of him putting that ideology on the table mm-hmm. with all honesty instead of being an allusion to past actions. It's him setting up something going forward and giving stakes that are not just the immediate stakes. Mm-hmm. It's not just can they be stopped. It's will the world learn what is true about the world? Will we all learn that we have something special in us, maybe?
Right. But here's the thing. We never really see what the world is like. What is the world being in mediocre times? Like, what does that even mean?
It just means us. It means that.
But
like,
we never like see that. Do you know what I mean? Like all the coverage and like there's no like larger setting for like this is what like is going on in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even see like us like average day to day really because it just immediately goes into. You know, David Dunn, like, and Kevin getting arrested, and then we're in the psychiatric world. We're never, like, just taking place, like, in the actual larger world and seeing what mediocre times means. And so that's, like, a little bit of the disconnect is, like, I don't know, like, what we're...
And they could have done that with little work, right?
Yeah, like, that could have been, like, one...
Give me a montage.
Give me a montage. Give me a conversation.
Something on the news that, like, helps... Because the movie goes so far to, like, justify Glass as, in some ways, you know, if not a hero, like, with some noble intentions along the way. And Samuel Jackson's acting does so much to help you buy his argument. But when you step back and look at, like, at Natalie's exact point, which is, like, all right... Do the ends justify the means of this? It's really hard to find any justification across three films that what this secret society was doing, bad. Genocide, bad. But like what, like the thousands, tens of thousands of lives that Samuel Jackson took out in pursuit of this. But you, in the moment, he makes you believe, well, I mean, man, you know, dude's got a point. But they don't do enough groundwork to like... balance that out with like
it's like Miracle on 34th Street but with like mass murder.
Well, like the thing is the case that needed to be made and is never made except in Bruce Willis's case and David Dunn's case in Unbreakable is there are all of these people whose lives could be improved because they could be their real selves. They could be open to who they truly are.
It does
are.
It in micro, yeah, just not
could
macro.
Could we see like who...
Right, that's what I'm saying. Is I could have made those cases with small vignettes throughout this film.
Of people like not like being real. Their full potential.
Right,
or whatever,
exactly. Yeah. Well, like and you almost... there could be a version of this film that has $5 million more that's spent just on a montage at the end of people around the world like
waking up
to their powers, being woken, being right, they're woke. That's the
oh my god, we figured it out. That's
what it is. That's what the name is. You got to be woke.
Or what if like this movie, like not necessarily longer, but like if this was like two films, right? Like there's so much, like if more of this film was just David Dunn and his son like trying to deal with being like the special in a world of mediocrity and realizing how little they can actually do against like the larger tide, like you start to see how like a different version of this film or one that like splits the difference finds like drags out like their life and they're dealing with and maybe that like also allows you to bring in the wife and like find
a
better
be a
way
character.
To like
mm-hmm. yeah
right
yeah.
and like she yeah. falls out from. Like, I mean, there's a totally understandable reason that, like, she'd be like, fuck y'all, if she finds out for, like, 15 years they've been operating, like, a secret shadowy thing. Like, that, if anything, like, I believe the original trilogy was supposed to center around David Dunn. And then it kind of got lost from that because of the weird way this actually came about. And there's probably a much better, you know, M. Night has not shown to be particularly responsible with his storytelling. But again, if, like... Like, someone brought this up on Twitter when I was asking for a question. Was like, are there bones here where, like, a better filmmaker, better scripts could have done something more interesting? And it's like, yeah, like, there is a David Dunn trilogy that takes a lot of these ideas and arrives at roughly the same conclusion, like, mm-hmm. about the secret society and unlocking people that is a lot more interesting than the three films we got.
There's something that bugs me here. This is what bummed me out so much about the fact that they just wrote his wife's character out completely is that... So much of the tension of that movie, in addition to the Elijah David dynamic, I really enjoyed the tension in Unbreakable where he loved her and had spent a lot of his life trying to be someone she would accept in her life and like to share a life with. And they fundamentally had different values. Now, that ends up putting a lot on her character that she shouldn't like necessarily have to bear. Mm-hmm. But I did like at the end of the movie, you have the very, it's an extremely Watchmen thing where after he's gone out and done his hero shit and just beaten the hell out of somebody, now he's a man. He carries her up the stairs to the bedroom. They're going to be man and wife again. It's going to be, and that is all predicated on the fact that he's now lying to her again. That right. Like, oh,
right.
I'm yeah. just going to go off and fucking break bones and kick ass, which is specifically the thing you told me you were not about when we got together. Yep. I'm now doing it on the sly. It's going to be great for our marriage. My son and I are now going to be lying to you every day. And yep. that's going to create a division. Like he's my kid now. Like more like we're on one side and you're going to be in the other. I think there's a really interesting direction they could have gone with that in this third movie, where like sort of a dark Incredibles in a way of trying to like sketch out a marriage. But instead they're just like, yeah, you know, her that dramatic arc was tied off pretty neatly, we think, and she's dead now.
She's dead. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't trust this team to have stuck the landing on that pitch you just gave, because that's a film that I want her perspective to be a perspective and not for her to be a character. And I want the film to know that I should, like, not like David Dunn because of that. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I think
that he's not, like, protecting her, and then that's a noble act.
Right. Sometimes regular people can't know. Women yeah, so can't
they
know.
Can't handle uh-huh. it.
Yeah, just there are bones to something here.
Yeah.
I think if you gave different, better filmmakers the same like basic structure, if you like knocked out, and also
like
I
Looper's
think
Looper's Rian Johnson.
Yeah, Rian Johnson's Unbreakable trilogy, I would watch. Rian Johnson, the director of
Brick,
Brick, and what's the
Last
other
Jedi.
Well, there's a third one.
Looper.
Fuck.
Are you
Which
okay?
I just said.
Did you say Looper?
That's how I introduced him.
I didn't hear you say Looper. I'm in my own mind really badly.
Well, because you know, in a lot of ways, Last Jedi is an interesting, you know, deconstruction of Star Wars as
yes.
mythology. So
yes.
like, he's the kind of, you know, he's just the one that comes to mind. There are lots of filmmakers who do it, but he's the one, like, he sees, and successfully in a lot of ways, in Last Jedi, played with ideas of deconstructing things without hitting you over the head with it in a monologue-y sort of way that, like, M. Night Shyamalan is a much lesser screenwriter and filmmaker, just cannot do anything but stare at the camera and say, showdown.
Yeah. Fuck.
Here's a thing that we did not talk about. The insignia for the ancient organization of battling superheroes is a clover.
Listen.
So every
there's
single
no joke I can make that isn't terrible. How?
When I saw the montage of clover tattoos, I was like,
do you think it's the Pope? Do you think it's the Holy Trinity thing? Do you think it's just Assassin's Creed? Because, like, they're the Templars, right? Like, they are the Assassin's Creed Temple. I don't know if people have played Assassin's Creed games. The Templars are an evil ancient association that...
What's their emblem? Clovers?
No, but the Pope was one, and the clover has, like, a three-leaf clover.
Right.
Is
the it's Father, like Son, the Trinity. Holy,
yeah, it's the Trinity. They're, like, yeah. I just think... And also, their whole thing is very Templar-esque.
It is.
It's Irish,
also, you know,
which is also not great. What is it? What is their bit? Why is it a clover?
Love to have my secret lair be like a popular daytime lunch spot where we also invite normal people,
yes,
and we just quietly wait for them to finish paying. Like, when are they going to finish their check? They got another drink.
What do you think they talk
Get
about?
The fuck
it's
out.
It's, while they're waiting. Do you think someone is like...
I totally forgot about that.
Did you see
that,
the fucking
those...
Eagles game last night,
it happens
bro?
Twice! It happens twice!
In two different places! That other place isn't the same place!
Oh, it's not?
No, the first place that they show the video of is her in, like, this tiny little, like, hallway restaurant. Like, it's a small restaurant.
I thought maybe that was a private room
maybe.
In the same
It was
building.
A private room that closed the door!
Also, look, I just gotta ask, like... the class dynamics within your secret society, because, like, okay,
uh-huh,
it's just us, and it's a bunch of, like, waiters, like, waitresses, bartenders, bankers, and, like, I'm like, okay, so is it share and share alike, or is everyone still going home where it's like, oh, well, I got to go to my sixth floor walk-up now after my shift being a bartender working on tips at the Clover Society?
Or is it just a front and they're all getting paid very handsomely for being a part of the society and they're like, I just like bartending. Mm-hmm. I like being a mixologist.
Doesn't sound like mediocre times to me.
I'm just gonna look it up real quick. Let's see how much money to rent a party space. Just give me a party hall in New York, you know. $175 an hour. Just rent somewhere. You don't have to wait for people to leave then. Just rent a place. Just rent a place.
How much less cool would that feel though? If it's like, okay, now you go to the VFW hall 52 and you go in.
Oh, that'd be great.
Like Clover balloons center outside the door. Folding tables set up.
I mean, you could have even done this whole setup he has, like, you could have done a funny bit even with it where it's like, they realize like a normal person is just like stuck in there. It's like,
yeah,
someone raised their hand like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, wait, why did everyone get quiet?
I was waiting for my Reuben and then...
Just like one guy still at the bar, like on his like eighth beer and is like not leaving.
So here's the actual like industry side question. Is this it? Is this the beginning of the new next thing? Who stars in his next superhero movie?
I don't know if he said. I should look and see.
Is it coming? Has he said for sure? Is this the end?
I don't know. I'm going to look.
Well, I mean, the movies and like culminates in declaration of this isn't a limited edition. This is an origin story. There's no one, except with the possible exception of the immortal cheerleader, there doesn't appear to be any like superpowered individual in this film, except for maybe Casey's troubling capacity for
power
empathy.
Of touch.
Oh my god! Oh, yeah, that's they the would totally thing. Make her a psychic or something
that's
in the next
the thing.
Movie, right?
Is it almost felt like the people that were gonna wake up next were Elijah's mom, David's son, and fucking Casey? Like they were gonna be the next. Awoken or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
so
when the, oh God. Mm.
He's, I don't want to relive stuff and I don't want to be an opportunist. Yeah. Okay. M. Night. that's not the relationship that I have with the audience that I aspire to. My aspiration is they know they're going to get an original thriller every single time. That's where my taste goes. So I'm going to say no right now. So that was in December. And that's before this movie made a shitload of money.
Yeah. This movie did super well.
It
cost $20 million. Yeah. It made $164 million. So far.
It was, profitable, like, on its first day.
I think...
Who would want to see that movie? Like, I just don't, like...
Also...
That movie would involve so much more action and set pieces just by nature.
Or would
it? Yeah.
Like, is there... So if you end on sort of the Assassin's Creed, the Clover Society is out there, and they could be anywhere. What you could end up with is a really paranoid, like, vision of sort of a like certain X-Men arcs where like superpowered individuals are basically like hunted and under attack and like always have to be watching their back, right? Like imagine like,
which is just heroes. It's just heroes. That's the show.
Good.
Heroes.
Make that and don't shit the bed. Like
you could all just watch Heroes.
You could all just watch The Incredibles. That's the same movie.
The Incredibles.
The Incredibles is. Everyone goes into hiding and lives average lives, even though they know they have more potential, but they're being hunted by
the government.
The government
came in and said, you're not allowed to be your best self. The government tries to tax you.
You got to be an insurance guy.
Yep. Don't trust big government.
Well, given The Incredibles invoked, and I asked for some questions on Twitter. Adam Anglosi asks, I'd be interested in hearing you talk about the Randian undercurrent of the ending, especially as it contrasts with The Incredibles, which this person says, in their opinion, never forgets the quote, with great power comes great responsibility, whereas Glass just wants us to admire power.
I think The Incredibles is incredibly Randian, but also I'll be quiet.
Why?
Because I think The Incredibles is incredibly Randian.
Well, you're not expressing an unpopular viewpoint.
No, I think it's an unpopular viewpoint.
Do you want to unpack? Some people have...
Yeah, exactly. Redbird is, absolutely.
Can you unpack what that means for people?
So the Incredibles, I haven't seen Incredibles 2, which I've heard sort of steps us back a little bit, despite the fact that there is like an entrepreneur character who gets like some, anyway, I'm not going to spoil what I've read about Incredibles 2, but I've seen Incredibles 1 a number of times. Mm-hmm. I loved it when it first came out. When I went to revisit it years later, I was like, whoa, there is like a weird undercurrent here, which is that the protagonists are people who have had to hide their true potential that makes them better than other people. And the villain is someone who wants to make everyone special. That is like literally the plot of The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. And that would be too chaotic and too dangerous to give everybody superpowers. And so they have to stop him. And also show the world that some of us are just better than other people and that we shouldn't have to hide that or bring that down. And like there's a very feel-good version of that when you if what you read it as is like difference is acceptable. It's okay not to be quote-unquote normal.
Being your true self.
Or if you are someone who has an identity that is marginalized or is rendered abnormal, then that isn't something that you should hide.
But Ratatouille does all that better.
Ratatouille does all that better. And also, that isn't the truth of The Incredibles. The Incredibles is a film in which one person is super strong and one person is super elastic, and they're super people. They're not, like, quote-unquote abnormal in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there is this line through it that it never confronts that says, what about regular people who are also forced to hide who they are and not because they have superpowers?
Mm.
In that world, they will continue to have to hide who they are. And also now there will be this new class of people who has superpowers and is just better. I agree that like that film does want those people with superpowers to have to do something good for the world. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
But like, I don't think that saves it from it.
In two, when they fuck up, they're like held responsible.
Sure.
I mean, that's what one is. That's
but
why
the
they have
is
to go.
They shouldn't have been held as responsible as they were. That there should be some system in which they're allowed to be the goodies, you know?
But it's like, wait, what do you mean?
In one, the end of it is not, and now they're going to go back to living private lives where they don't get to do superhero shit.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, when they fucked up in the past, like, when, like,
right,
their
actions
caused,
as a bad thing for the whole movie.
Caused mass destruction, or, like, I don't know, like, destruction of infrastructure and stuff like that, that they're, like, being held responsible.
Right, but then the rest of that film is, and the world is worse for it. Because we don't get to be superheroes anymore. We have to be private about our superheroism. That is the villain of that movie is someone who wants everybody to be equal, wants everybody to be super powerful. And the secondary villain of that movie, the reason that they can't just stop him out the gate is that they've had to move into private lives where they don't get to live up to their true potential because regulators have stepped in.
Right.
Which is also the question of like Civil War. It's not a question that's rare in superhero fiction.
Right.
I think Civil War is also something that's like tricky around this, but I actually think the original Marvel run of the comic Civil War does a pretty good job of this because it very quickly, what it does is it makes a decent case for why people who have superpowers are not just marginalized folk, which many of these stories just try to be like, oh, the X-Men are like the X-Men. It's a civil rights story. Like, okay, well, black people can't shoot lasers out their eyes, so not really. And Civil War does that, and then also suggests that there are multiple types of responses that a government could have, ranging from local and reasonable to like hyper nationalistic and fascist. And most superhero movies that explore this stuff don't have the space and time to do that with nuance, and many of them do what I think the original Incredibles, and then also I agree with this, what this trilogy does, has this Randian undercurrent of some of us are just better than others, and the world tries to keep us down. Like, what would happen if, where it isn't Randian, where this trilogy is less Randian than I think the Incredibles, is that no one ever threatens to go galt. The question is never brought up, what would happen if not for the superheroes? In The Incredibles, the answer is if not for the superheroic, if not for, in Rand's idealized version, the hyper-industrialists, right? Mm-hmm. The world would fall apart, right? That is the threat that Rand puts on the page in her works, is like, if not for the oil tycoons and the railroad magnates, the world would be worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what The Incredibles says. The world would be worse if not for the superpowered people who are allowed to do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that this movie ever does that because we don't see them really helping people en masse.
And also,
half of them kill people.
The movie's like, doesn't get enough into its own internal logic of its mythology. It's like, does everyone have a power they just don't realize?
Right.
Or are there truly just exceptional people? Like, so when what Elijah was looking for was someone indestructible. And so he caused mass chaos and death to search for like a superpower he had plucked out of a comic book because those are the archetypes he's familiar with. And so his basis was like, oh, the reason we have comic books with people who are invincible is because people have always been invincible, or some people have. But it's like, did he end up just killing thousands of people that did have latent superpowers that just either hadn't recognized I mean, like, the movie doesn't end with any sort of resolution. Like, are there people, exceptional people, or is everyone exceptional? They just haven't recognized it, which is like, is it a larger bullshit metaphor for like, people have strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes you just don't get a chance to recognize it in your like day-to-day career or life or what you do with yourself. I don't know. The movie doesn't really land on that one way or the other.
Yeah, I think that's like the lesson it wants us to walk away from is like the world should be inspired by possibility, right? Like, yes. We are all.
You can be greater than your current mediocrity.
Watching that cannibal flip a car and eat a riot cop sure inspired me.
And watching that dude slightly bend. I don't know. You know, I mean, like, it's not.
I think it'd be aluminum. Like, you can't tell on the video. Like, it's
gonna be a fucking shower. Do a lot with computers these days.
Yeah, that is. It is.
Also, like, they're like, we sent it out 2 hours ago. When are people gonna notice? Like, what does that even mean? They just like made a random Twitter account. Superheroes are real. Like, how does virality work?
In
I know all of them just sitting in the train station waiting for people to like look at their.
Honestly, that's what it's like when you publish a big story, though, Patrick. You know it's true. We're like, fuck. I hope this hits the top of Reddit, or we're only getting.
But I know who I'm looking at, right? Yeah, like, fair. I'm looking at like people who follow video games to see if something hits. They're in a train station with a wide variety of people, and also they upload clips, but like. Elijah sent a stream of videos, and what he's also sent an email with those pre-made clips already edited.
He's a good programmer.
There's someone else. There's another
like
character.
Like a hacker or something.
A hacker editor who's just...
He should have sent it to Joseph. That's what I thought was going to happen, was Joseph was going to get, look, your father, you know, which, I mean...
Well, he did. Joseph did get those videos, right?
He did, but like, I thought there would have been an arc where it's like, what do you do with this, right? Like, it's a baton passing where it's like, you know, I unlocked the potential of your father, blah, blah, blah. Like,
and then you see Joseph
like,
and
what do
iMovie.
What do you do with this information?
he's the fastest video editor in the world. It's just incredible. Like,
that's his potential.
That's his power. Yeah, I was going to go the other way, which is like, you see Joseph lift his iPhone to the screen to record a video off his own screen. God.
It's a vertical video, too.
It is, absolutely. God damn it. He puts it on TikTok.
Yeah, what's with these full-frame videos?
I can't believe they revealed superheroes are real on TikTok. Unbelievable.
That's the mediocre world we live in.
It's James McAvoy doing the cheetah run across the thing, and it's like, hit or miss. I guess I never miss, huh? Anyway, someone please make me the hit or miss edit of Glass. Thank you.
I'm Gregory O'Gallagher. And these are my superheroes. I have been fascinated by human potential.
Any final thoughts on Glass before we bounce out?
I think we're gonna see another one. I think that Joseph and Casey are gonna fall in love, and it's gonna be bad.
Or what if they go?
She's a high school student, though. Joseph is.
Isn't he? Is he not? He's like 20s.
Yeah,
he's got to be in his 20s because he was like 7 or 8.
He was like 12,
yeah.
I think.
Okay, that makes
maybe
sense.
He was like 11. I don't know. Any age from like, you could be 8 or 12 in my eyes. I'm like, you're 8 or maybe you're 12. I don't know. Anyway, I just can't tell. Like, what's the maturity?
Natalie's
that...
superpower, not being able to tell the difference in ages.
That's her one weakness. Can only be killed.
Is if you could transform yourself into a child of varying ages.
I wouldn't know what age.
That's why Hedwig's power is so powerful.
Yeah.
As a 9-year-old, he will always be able to sneak past you.
Yeah. Because I'll be like, how old are you? I don't know.
Damn.
But that talk that
Mr. Glass gives to Hedwig is everybody has superpowers. Like talk, right?
Yeah.
Or like we're all special in our own way talk. I think
your perspective is special.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I even think that there's a world in which
Also dance.
Also Hedwig can dance and likes Drake now.
Oh my fucking god.
Gone wrong.
How did we make it this far without bringing that up?
I forgot. He was like, and that's literally just what he says. He's like, by the way, I like Drake now.
Motherfucker, these cheerleaders didn't see the last movie. Who
Look,
are you talking? You're talking to us.
Hedwig is also hiding a child or children. So I can see there being a lot of identification.
God. Someone put Pusha T into an M. Night Shyamalan film.
Please.
Thank you. All right. I don't have anything else.
I don't.
Except that I probably do. We could talk about this forever, but let's just eject.
I will say, yeah, I will just like leave with there were bones.
There were bones.
There were bones. That could have been something.
Yeah.
I think it was a perfectly fine, mediocre movie. Like, and that's a weird, like, if you want to see something with a lot of talented people involved, that's just not that great. Mm-hmm. But, like, has some good moments of talented people doing cool shit occasionally.
And a lot of grime.
And a lot of grime. But, you know, there's so much that already has grime. Like, be good and rewatch it. We're hip deep in grime.
Yeah, here's my question, guys. Uh-huh. Why do we keep watching mediocre ass movies?
Okay, so, okay. Austin and I had this fucking argument yesterday.
It was not an argument. It was over text. I didn't use caps once.
Austin was like, you know what we should watch next? And he lists like a shit ton of like B movies.
Okay, to be clear.
No, hold on.
There are reasons for that, and you know it.
I see all the caps coming from Rob's side,
not
from Austin's side.
That's another thing. I'm not going to read this out loud, but we were talking about general waypoint strategy, ways to present a platform for people to do things that they want to do, which includes talk about some bad movies.
Your excuse was, look, Patrick likes schlock horror, and that's the world we live in. That's
Patrick
what,
and Danielle like schlock horror.
Yeah, dude, putting that all on me, motherfucker?
Patrick, dude, you proposed to your wife at a schlock horror fest. There is video of...
They both like schlock horror. It's romantic.
Yeah, my wife and I fell in love watching Puppet Master movies, so get off. Go do one.
You're the end of that podcast.
I want to hear the proposal story.
Oh my god, they're so mean to this director, like to his face. While they, excruciating. He's really hurt.
Wait, who are you mean to?
The short.
In your proposal.
Band. No.
Will you marry me and fuck this bad director?
Natalie, the short version is Charles Band. Director of a lot of schlocky, producer of a lot of schlocky horror movies like Ghoulies, Puppet Master. My wife and I more or less like fell in love watching those films. Later, he got into making not so great films that were kind of capitalizing on his name. Not super surprised that it happens to a lot of horror directors. He had a series called Evil Bong. The third Evil Bong 3.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Evil Bong. Yep.
Oh, you don't know about this, huh?
The first one is kitschy enough.
You don't know about this at all. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. Evil Bong 3, they had a contest. It's like, hey, come up with a subtitle for Evil Bong 3 and you'll get a writing credit or a story credit on IMDb. I was like, yeah, that sounds hilarious. Okay. So like over drinks, I came up with a friend, Evil Bong 3, Wrath of Bong. Also came up with like a whole like plot summary. Thought that you needed to submit a plot summary. You did not need to submit a plot summary. I submitted a plot summary. Then they were like, we're going to make this a fan vote. And they put it on like a bad polling website in which it didn't like cache your web browser for voting. So I just voted over and over for my own thing thousands of times.
You also told people to vote for it.
I did. I didn't have much of a Twitter following back then. It was like pre-Giant Bomb. Okay. I was known, but not like, it's a different
era. That MTV News Army mobilized for you though.
I'm sure I got some votes out of it. It was mostly me sitting at a desk at G4, just like refreshing it during my lunch break. So I win. And they're like, oh, actually, Patrick, we're befuddled. He submitted a summary with his title. We love it, though. So we're going to make a script out of that, and we're going to shoot that movie. So they shoot that movie. We actually went to the set in L.A.
You wrote the Evil Bong 3?
No.
Story by Patrick Klebeck.
Plot summary. Story by. It's on IMDb. I'm in the poster. Thank you.
Wait, are you in the poster?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm in the poster. It's a story by.
Oh, I thought you meant you were in the poster. I thought you were.
No, not my face. My name. And then there's a horror convention every year in Chicago. And they, not just completely coincidentally, said, we are going to do the premiere of Evil Bong 3 in Chicago. We were living in San Francisco at the time. We had gone from L.A. to San Francisco. And my wife, roughly 9 months before that, was like, hey, I want to get married. We're not in a rush or anything like that. I want to get married before I'm 30. That was the deadline I was given. I was like, okay, I can work with that. That gives me like a 2 year to like propose. And I was like, if I'm gonna propose, I gotta do something interesting. And then this kind of like fell in my lap. I was like, oh, we could fly back. I could take my family and friends to this movie that I now have a story by credit. And on stage, I went up and I was introduced by the director and I proposed on stage at Evil Bong 3, Wrath of Bong. And that is the story of how I proposed to my wife.
It's beautiful in my
It's a very sweet story, but the part that really stands out in my memory is when the director is like, so yeah, what made you decide to do this? And Patrick's like, well, you know, Katie and I love shitty movies. And the guy, like...
Oh my God, that's Patrick! You're wearing a suit!
Yeah, I went for
There's a video. Yeah, it's a lot. You look 13. Not 8 to 12, though.
Once you get out of 12, you're good. Rob, I was nervous.
Oh my God, oh my God.
It's very cute. It's it's very good.
Oh,
and then the movie was so bad and borderline offensive that everyone I invited, like 30 plus people, left to go to an open bar that my dad opened up in the hotel lobby in the theater
Shout
lobby.
Out.
My Save dad, the fucking my day.
My dad 5 minutes in says, I'm not doing this, and walks out. And he's like, I'm just going to go get drinks, tell anyone they could come and have some. And I was like, that's fine. I'm the only one that stayed to the end. My wife said, my family's here. I'm going to go hang with them. And I was like, that's fine. I'm going to sit here till the end.
You, okay. You know what?
That's Patrick's opus. Yep. Give him that.
This is the best story I've ever heard.
Yep.
Everyone actually out there, step the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Get your proposal game to Patrick Klepek level proposing at Evil Bong 3.
Yeah. 3D.
And three, so my
3D?
My wife doesn't it was 3D. Red and blue, red, you know, just the red, you know, not
just
a good
bong
DVD.
Just
it was
coming
just
out the screen at you just like yep.
Oh, and it also had smell-o-vision.
No.
So you would scratch
Are
things
you sure?
during the movie?
Or would you people just laugh? This movie has smell-o-vision, right?
This is the
just
most
clouds
amazing
of smoke.
Story.
Just like billowing out of the theater.
It was me hotboxing in the back.
What a twist! The camera pans down the aisle and walks forward, and you see in the back of
12-year-old
Natalie hotboxing the theater. Unbreakable
huge
2
over times.
I also, my wife doesn't wear a lot of jewelry, and so I didn't have to buy her a lot of rings over the years, and so I didn't know her ring size.
God.
And there'd be no way for me to ask that without giving away the game.
Hey, what's your ring
and
size?
So,
yeah, that's not great.
Right. Like,
so what'd you do?
Especially after she'd already given me, like, you know, a 2-year runway
yeah,
deadline.
You should
like,
have
any ring
asked
size
that
talk
during
was,
the 2-year conversation.
I should
That's
have.
The plan.
I should have. but I didn't. And so instead, I like... at the time looked up how to spoof email addresses. And so I sent her an email from Charles Band, the director, that was like, hey, we want to make something special for you out of something from the set.
What?
What's your ring size? And she responded with like, that sounds so good. And the kicker to this is that, so I got the ring size, you know, got the ring made. When I proposed, we sat down and she turns to me and she goes like, well, did Charles make something for me, too? What about that email?
Wow. I was about to say there's no way she believed that, and then you fucking nailed it. So, nice work.
That's like a kid still pretending to believe in Santa, I think. Yeah. That was her throwing, like, you pulled it off, sweetie. Good job.
That's incredible.
It is.
That is really the best thing ever.
But this is why we can't have nice things on this show. Because Austin is like, we have to play to Patrick's singular tastes. And so it's going to be Blumhouse all the way down. And
wow, it has been.
Rob, you should just pick the next movie.
We
Take
did.
Us on a
it's
journey.
Serenity.
That's Patrick's
Rob,
my
already,
fault,
Rob liked it so much he already saw it, you know?
Rob, after Serenity... You can Rob's taste du jour. You can tell
you can
us.
Pick
you can
the
take
movie.
Us
yeah.
take us on a journey.
Take us on a journey, Rob.
Rob's movie.
Ava
next.
Is a little far away. Like we know Ava's coming this spring. We have a lot of canvas to work with before that. So Rob, I'm here by designating you.
you said Ava. I felt like AVA. What is that?
Evangelion.
What are we looking forward
oh
to
my
this
God.
Spring. I know.
Rob, I'm designating you movie picker. That's it. I've done it. Executive order. As a super person, my power is telling you, you can do this.
Hey, we have some good sci-fi horror films we came up with, though, the other
we
day.
We did. That's the thing. We kind of found a middle ground here.
Which is what?
We're not going to talk about it yet. I mean, well, maybe we should. We should let people send in what they think.
Do you want to throw out some ideas?
So Danielle came back and was really high on the idea of doing some sci-fi horror stuff. Surprise. Danielle, also big fan of horror and big fan of sci-fi stuff. One of the movies that came up was Sunshine, Danny Boyle's space horror thriller. Thriller and then becomes a horror movie in the last act.
Incredible soundtrack.
Incredible soundtrack to that film. And I haven't seen it in probably a decade, but I remember liking it mostly. And I think from that, we can build out a palette of things in that space. And I'd love to hear some suggestions from people. So I don't want to commit to things, but I think that is like the center point of like sci-fi, horror, and like the thing Rob wants is for it to be good, which means there are movies that you're going to suggest, and you know what? Go ahead and suggest them. But we would like to have at least...
Unbreakable was in that realm, right? Like good and interesting, like good but like flawed but interesting.
Yeah.
We talked about Annihilation on Away Points, didn't we? Or no?
I don't think we did talk about
Annihilation. Annihilation would be good.
It's and out. Annihilation would be good. We should talk about Annihilation.
Such a good movie.
We should do Annihilation. This is it. We're doing this, doing it live.
Doing it live.
As they say.
As they say.
If you have suggestions, people should hit us up.
In this vein. Oh, what if we did Sphere? Is Sphere a bad movie?
What's Sphere?
Was Sphere...
Man, I haven't seen that in a long time. I remember loving Sphere.
I remember loving the book. I don't remember how the movie was. Sam Jackson's in it. There's some continuity. All right.
There has to be a thread. There has to be a thread that connects each.
There has to be like from movie to movie. There has to be some sort of connective tissue.
Yeah.
Looking up cinematographers, best boys.
The grip. The same on this one.
I had a sweet arc where we were going to segue from the DeMonico stuff through Assault on Precinct 13 right into Carpenter.
You're right.
And then it would have just been Greenfields and High Tides.
You're right. But we didn't do that. Instead, we did this.
Until then, you can follow everything we do at Waypoint, waypointadvice.com. You can sign up for this podcast, which if you're listening, it's separate from the Waypoint Radio feed, but please leave a review. Please leave some stars, you know, whichever. Do both if you can. You can follow me at Patrick Klupik. Rob, where can people follow you yelling about, I don't know, what do you do on Twitter?
I tweet about Michael Mann movies and how they're the most works of cinema of the 20th and 21st centuries. At Rob Zachney.
Natalie.
Still deep in my feelings at Natalie Watson over Kingdom Hearts.
You want to get deep in your feelings?
Wait, is that your new
Collateral?
What? Oh my god! Yeah, true. Is that your new Twitter handle? Deep in my feelings at Natalie Watson over Kingdom Hearts. At Natalie Watson over Kingdom Hearts is my favorite Kingdom Hearts title.
God, Austin Walker.
I still tweet about Gundam a lot, I guess. That's what I've been doing lately. I'm on my Gundam shit right now.
We're going to talk about Mechs later today.
We are going to talk about Mechs later today. I'll talk about why I deep in my feelings with Gundam as a connection, too. Austin_Walker on Twitter.
Our thanks to Too Mellow for our theme music. Our thanks to Kato. Kato, what's your Twitter?
A_Kato_appears.
Yes. Thanks to Kato for producing editing. You can find more of Too Mellow's music over at TooMellowMakes.bandcamp.com and follow Too Mellow at MellowMakes on Twitter. We don't. So do we have? I guess we do have next week's Serenity. So.
I asked my boy.
Go see Serenity. Recommending people?
I do not think it's going to be in theaters.
I know us.
Rob, I would. Wait, what? It's going to be in theaters for more than a week.
I asked my boyfriend to go see it with me this weekend, and he said no.
Wow.
So I'm going to go see it alone.
We should do a Waypoint New York
I'm pretty
trip.
Sure.
Yeah, let's do it.
This might be that, like, I saw Glass last night with my wife. We tend to watch everything together. I don't know if I've ever. I don't think I've seen a movie by myself before.
It's a weird experience.
Legit don't think I've
it's
done
taken
it.
Me. I had like severe anxiety, and it's taken me years to build up the ability to go watch a movie by myself. But
I
I'm
felt like a
now.
King.
Wow. Okay.
One time, my dad and I went to see a movie, and we were the only people in the theater, so we ordered a pizza.
That
to
is
the theater,
incredible.
And when the pizza guy showed up, one of the guys came in from outside and was like, yeah, there's a pizza here for you. And so we got that. And then I felt bad at first. I was like, oh, man, they're going to get mad at us. And we went out and we like finished the movie. We were at this like tiny theater out in the middle of nowhere in New Jersey to see something that was not playing anywhere near us. And we went out back to like the lobby when the movie was over and it was empty. Like no one was there. Like, where the fuck are these guys who work here? We go outside and they're laying on the pavement smoking weed looking at the stars. And I was like, we ordered the pizza to the right fucking theater. We should have given them a slice, honestly.
You should have.
God. Anyway, defining theater moments.
I didn't go to movie theaters for a few years recently because I got really afraid of movie theaters and I got a lot of anxiety in them.
Fair.
But now I'm starting to get back on my movie theater grind. So
Serenity.
I don't know if I'm at going alone yet, but so maybe Serenity will change me.
God.
You changed me.
All right, we'll find out. All right, be good to watch it next week with Serenity. I'm not even sure if I'm recommending the rest. We have to see it. I don't know if I'm recommending the audience sees it. That's on you. You need to pick your path on Serenity. But we'll be back next week with some talk on Serenity. We'll see you then.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Yeah.
Wait. Refresh your thing. Refresh your thing.
Oh, okay. I was on the wrong time.
8.
10? 8. Okay.
We've gotten away from challenging ourselves.
That's true.
That's true.
We're doing a lot of easy numbers. I want to make sure we're, it's 2019. It's early. Got to make sure we're on our toes. Like the tiptoe man. Got to make sure we're on our toes.
True.
All right. Everyone good?
Yeah.
All right. 3.
I forgot my point, Patrick.
It's fine. If it comes back, we'll get back to it. Yep. 3, 2.
Got a PG-13 movie coming up.
Mm-hmm.
What is?
Whatever that new HBO movie
is. Yeah.
Which, honestly, I think is better than just having Good Morning America on like yesterday. I'd rather have a movie.
Well, yeah,
on.
A movie I can just fuck out.
You can just fuck out. Uh-huh.
And just, like, fuck off and tune out.
It can do one. Uh-huh. It can do one.
It can do one. Good Morning America is too relevant.
It's the first time someone has said that in a long time.
You know, that feel
it's just seed. It's too hard hitting. It just it's too immediate. It's
that
too real.
That happened today? Fuck that. I'm still on yesterday. Good morning yesterday.
That is what I need, honestly.
Same.
Can we start a new show? What if we started the new podcast, everyone?
Good Morning Yesterday.
Uh-huh.
That's just John Oliver's Last Week Tonight.
Oh, true. True. That is that. Yeah.
That is that.
Good Morning Drumpf.
It's Invictus. That's the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's... All right. Ready?
Yep.
Yep.
Rob, you typing?
No.
Oh. What a
twist.
Pencils
down.
He's not typing.
God damn it.
All right. 3, 2.